Well, today is the 24th of August, and breakfast producer Tom Mann is in here in the studio to tell us about something that happened on this day in history. What have you got for us this morning, Tom?
Well, on this day in 1995, funnily enough, Microsoft's Windows 95 went on sale.
Well, is it time?
Yes. So, yeah, I just thought there's not heaps of significance specifically about the fact that Windows 95 went on sale, but there's a few, you know, it's sort of one of those things that's sort of a sticking point in people's minds because it's when people really started getting computers. It was very high selling.
It was indeed. It was the first time most people could afford one, and without a little green screen and or blue screen and putting in your own.
And they were small enough to, you know, like to fit into a room, and you could still have other things. And there was lots of like celebrity fanfare around it too. They really put a lot of emphasis into marketing. For example, the CD version of Windows 95, which was quite cutting edge at that time, included a music video for Weezer's Buddy Holly song. That they even they had an introduction video which sort of explained what the Windows 95 operating system was, which starred Jennifer Aniston from Friends, which was very popular at the time. You know, she was sort of running through the Windows, the Microsoft, you know, headquarters, you know, being taught about it. But also one significant thing is the startup sound was composed by musician Brian Eno.
I believe we have that here.
Yes.
Just in case you've never heard it.
So I think that was a quite fun thing for him to work on.
Very iconic sound.
Yes, absolutely.
He probably has a bit of a laugh about that because it's probably more iconic than anything else he's ever done. Even though I think everything he's done is pretty iconic. But
weirdly enough, yeah, probably.
My biggest hit? Well, you know that startup music and Windows 95, it was me. Well, I wonder how that goes down for groupies. And look, we're going to talk about Pluto.
Yes. So also on this day in 2006, I think many listeners would remember this, the planet Pluto was reclassified as a dwarf planet. It was downgraded.
I haven't gotten over it, Tom.
No, I know.
I remember it. I'm scarred by it.
It was quite devastating, I think, for a lot of people. You know, you grow up and you think you know the facts of the world. You think you know what the solar system is. And then in 2006, the International Astronomical Union comes along
and just rips it out
and tells you what is and isn't a planet.
But amazingly, after that, we found out that there's a lot of other things out there near Pluto that could almost be a planet.
Yeah.
How did they not see them?
It's weird that in the reinvestigation into what is and isn't a planet, they found, you know, so much more you know, interesting space things out there. But basically the reason it happened was up until then they sort of were using the term planet, but the astronomical, you know, people who study it hadn't actually defined what a planet was. They just said, oh, this is a planet, this is a planet, this is a planet. And but they didn't have any rules around what they called a planet. They just went, oh, well, we know this is a planet because it does this and that. And by the rules that they all pretty much unanimously voted on, Pluto could no longer be classified as a planet.
And what are these rules?
Well, the rules are it orbits the sun. It's large enough to assume a nearly round shape, and I think there was one other one. I can't remember what it was, but. I think it's because Pluto's a bit smaller and it's oblong shaped. It's not quite round.
Wow. And it crosses Neptune or something orbit.
Yes.
So it doesn't have a completely independent orbit. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, Pluto, you're now just a dwarf planet, but still there with us.
Still in people's hearts as a planet.
Yeah.
Which is what's really important in science, is how you feel about it.
Well, and now to a musician.
Yes, finally on this day in 1990, Sinead O'Connor refused to perform if the United States national anthem was played before her show at the Garden State Arts Plaza in New Jersey.
I think that's fair enough. On your skinny.
Yeah, she, I mean, out of all the things that Sinead O'Connor, you know, around this time, particularly in the 90s, she was constantly causing controversies and you know, making headlines for things that she was doing. I think this is probably the, you know, like the least controversial thing she could have done. But yes, that, you know, like as we all know, America is quite a patriotic, almost nationalist country, and there was quite a lot of uproar about the fact that that she didn't want the national anthem to be played before her performance.
Look, if I was playing anywhere either, I wouldn't want the national anthem anywhere played before for a gig. That's kind of a bit weird.
Yes, it is. it's apparently a tradition at this venue, the Garden State Arts Plaza, and they'd been doing it before every performance since 1968. Mm. And they later said that, you know, the director of the centre said he was quite disappointed in Sinead's decision to not have the anthem played before her performance, and said for future performances he would put it into a contract clause stating that they couldn't refuse to have it played. So it caused a lot of controversy at the time.
Well, Sinead O'Connor's been in the news very recently for other things. She's had she's suffering a mental illness, and there's been a custody case in Ireland where the state's taken one of her children away. And
I have heard little bits about that. I think she is once again in a bit of strife.
And I hope she gets better soon. And
absolutely.
Well, this one's for you, Sinead, and we're not playing any national anthem before it. I believe you've chosen No Man's Woman.
Yes, I thought that appropriate. Felt appropriate.
Yeah, well, here it is, Sinead O'Connor. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks, Anne.